Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, is the post to my Vespertine, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Happy Bjork Day. Happy Bjork Day. Bjork's new album is out.
I never knew that you were such a big Bjork fan, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
learn something new every week.
I feel like I've mentioned it on like the last three podcasts. And this will probably, I probably won't mention it next week. Although I guess we'll talk about like the albums for sale now. Maybe we'll talk about that Bjork album sales next week. That'll be our lead story.
Hate to break it to you, I don't have a projection yet for what it's going to do in its first week.
That's fine. We'll save that for next week. We can keep stringing Bjork into every Pop Shop podcast.
Okay.
Just like all of our listeners want. Yeah. Keith, we have a fun show today. We are going to be talking about Meghan Trainor, Fall Out Boy, Uptown Funk, Ed Sheeran, Maroon 5, Kelly Clarkson, Sia, and then we are going to be joined by Dawn Richard of Danity Kane fame, as well as her great new solo album, Blackheart. She stopped by the Pop Shop Podcast to talk about the making of that album and moving on from Danity Kane and what's next in her solo career. So she's great, and she's a really compelling artist, so can't wait to get to that. Keith, before we get started, a couple house cleaning notes.
Ooh, house cleaning.
Oh, yeah. First of all, big thank you again to Tyler Oakley for co-hosting last week's episode, which was our 2015 pop music preview. It's an hour long. It's on iTunes and SoundCloud right now. It was a blast. I'm sure we'll have Tyler back on the show as soon as we can, but it was fun, man. It was awesome. I mean, he was out in LA with you.
I
guess we're indeed. I guess we're probably gonna touch base with him at the Grammys, which is kind of cool.
Yes. We may have just tipped someone's hand, but he may or may not be at the Grammy Awards.
You never know.
Yeah.
And the second house cleaning thing I want to note is just to say, if you like the show, give us a rating in iTunes. We mentioned this sometimes on the show and on Twitter, but it helps our stats, and we always welcome listener feedback. We had one user comment on iTunes this past week about Madonna, which was very fun and welcomed. And just give us a rating on iTunes. It'll be fun. It'll take a second.
Give us a rating. Subscribe.
Yeah,
share
subscribe
it
too.
We're not above the idea of promoting ourselves. And and when it's good quality content, we're going to promote it. So
I know.
Just
hell
to, you know,
yeah.
if you like us on billboard.com, when you listen to the SoundCloud embed, feel free to go over to iTunes. It's a whole new experience. It's fun. There's a ton of podcasts to choose from, and we're one of them. So why not us too?
Done and done. All right. So Keith, let's get to the pop music goodness of this week. First of all, we got to talk about Meghan Trainor. We've brought her up many times on the show because of her singles, which have done very well. All About That Bass, Lips Are Moving. Both top five hits, in the case of All About the Bass, a number one hit for multiple weeks.
Yep.
And now she has a number one album, it seems.
It seems, indeed, she does. It's not
very cool.
It's not a singing thing. Meghan Trainor is number one on the Billboard 200 chart. She had a really big first week. So her first full-length album, which is called Tidal, came out last week, and it follows a four-song EP that she put out last year that was also called Tidal, just to confuse everyone. So she has a Tidal EP and then a full-length album also called Tidal. So
it's like an Abbott and Costello at like bit. It's like what was the title of
what was the title
first
of that
EP?
Title?
Oh,
title? The title's
what,
title.
No, the title of it. Oh no, it's Tidal. What? Anyway.
What title? You mean that title that's on the title chart? Anyway, Meghan Trainor's Tidal debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart, and it shifted 238,000 overall units. Now, remember, that unit figure is traditional album sales, and then streaming equivalent albums and track equivalent albums. To make it a little bit more easier, we would then say now that she sold 195,000 albums in the pure traditional sense, in the sort of the old-fashioned way where we talk about pure album sales. So just looking at that number, that's a really big sales figure for January.
Yes.
Because generally speaking, most big albums don't come out in January. and it's kind of like a dead period for new releases. So anyway you slice it, it's a really impressive figure for Megan, both the overall unit figure and her traditional album sales figure. Certainly, she's had months and months of build-up to this because of the success, as you said, of All About That Bass, which was number one for 8 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Then she had a top five, you know, success with Lips Are Moving. So she's had a lot of exposure leading up to this. She had the EP that was helping, you know, get people into the fold of becoming what's her Megatrons? Is that her fan base called?
Megatrons, yeah.
So yeah, she's been, you know, doing... But I think a lot of people were probably surprised at how well this album did. I think if you asked her label and her team, I would think that they probably thought it was going to start a little bit softer if you asked them, like, you know, a month or two ago. So
yeah,
I think this is a really big number for them.
It's very impressive for a new artist like Megan Trainor, who, you know, before this moment wasn't necessarily an albums artist. You know, we talk so many times on the show about singles artists versus albums artists. I mean, you look at someone like Ariana Grande, who has who dominated the summer, basically, with her singles, and... You know, she had a number one album debut, her second number one album debut, in fact. But My Everything sold slightly less than Megan Trainor. Like, I mean,
it sold 169,000.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's comparing two different artists and two different projects. But this is to say that, like, Megan Trainor sold a lot of copies this week for someone who a year ago no one really knew who she was. And, you know, speaking of which, takes Taylor Swift's 1989 momentarily, at least, out of the top spot on the Billboard 200 albums chart. We kind of saw this coming. We a couple weeks ago on the show, we talked about what January releases could topple 1989, which has spent multiple weeks at number one. And Tidal was the one to do it, man.
Did we actually say that Megan Trainor would debut at number one? Were we confident
of
that?
We tossed it out. I don't think we were that confident.
Yeah, I don't think we were either.
We tossed it out. We tossed out a couple ones. I know we mentioned Fall Out Boy, which is coming out this week. Fifth Harmony, which is coming out next week. But yeah, we definitely mentioned Megan Trainor, and she did it. I assume Taylor Swift falls to number two on this
week's
chart.
Yeah, Taylor Swift is number two this week, falls one spot with 1989. Do you want me to quickly run down the rest of the big notable debuts in the top 10? I can just say
Let's
them really
do it.
Quickly.
Yeah.
The Kidz Bop Kids, can't keep those darn kids down. Kidz Bop 27.
They keep bopping.
They keep on bopping. They debut at number three on the Billboard 200. Mark Ronson's Uptown Special debuts at number five, powered, of course, by his huge number one
Uptown
hit,
Funk.
Uptown Funk. Maroon 5, actually, this is not a debut, but it's a huge jump. They jump 15 to 8 into the top 10 thanks to the sort of viral success with their new single Sugar and that video where they allegedly crash weddings, but they're not really crashing any weddings. It's all like a ruse. And then just outside the top 10, Ella Henderson debuts at number 11 with her new album, her debut album, Chapter 1.
Hey, there you go. Ella Henderson, a friend of the Pop Shop podcast.
Yes, previous guest.
Let's look ahead for a second to next week. Fall Out Boy has their new album, American Beauty, American Psycho. And this is coming less than 2 years after Save Rock and Roll, their comeback album after an extended hiatus. That album debuted at number one on the Billboard 200. Is it looking like, do you have a projection for that album?
I do.
Is it aiming for number one next week?
Yeah, it will, unless something goes crazy wrong, Fall Out Boy should debut at number one on the Billboard 200 next week. Don't have an exact, it's really hard to figure out that new overall consumption unit number.
Sure.
But it's looking like the album could do over 180,000 in traditional album sales, maybe a little bit more. It could hit 200. And then perhaps its overall unit figure would be then over 200. So yeah, it should certainly be number one. To compare, their last album, Save Rock and Roll, as you talked about, did debut at number one, but it sold 154,000 copies. So it looks like this album is going to start off much stronger than the last album, which speaks to the kind of rebuilding that Save Rock and Roll did and probably got them some new fans and maybe some fans that had maybe fallen by the wayside. Maybe they got them back.
Yeah, I mean, Fall Out Boy is one of the few rock bands out there right now that is really making a dent in the pop world, not just with album sales, because you know you see some rock acts just continue to put out albums that sell well, like Black Keys and Foo Fighters, but you also have Fall Out Boy is a band that can score like a top 20 hit on the Hot 100 with a song like Centuries.
They've had hits with, you know, Alone Together and Centuries, and, you know, of course, the big hit from the last album was My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark. Light 'em up.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, I know that you're not a big Fall Out Boy fan.
I'm not. But I'm more aware of their stuff now than I probably have been in a very long time. I actually know two Fall Out Boy hits in my head. I can actually like hum them for you, which is pretty remarkable.
First of all, for those listening, go to billboard.com because today we're recording this on Wednesday. It'll still be up on Thursday. Chris Payne, our alternative rock guru on billboard.com, is posting the 10 best Fall Out Boy songs ever. A list I had many questions about because it's very close to my heart as well. And my second point is that Fall Out Boy's, I don't know if it's a new single, but it's the new song, the song they released just before the album came out. It's called Uma Thurman, debuts at number 73 on the Hot 100. It is my favorite song on American Beauty, American Psycho. Keith, you have to check out this song because it is so cool how it's basically built around a sample of the Munsters theme song back from, you know, like the Munsters, the classic TV show.
Or is that Adam's Family? That's Adam's Family, isn't it? Anyway, keep going.
It's that's Adam's Family. But Munsters is like the So now thousands of people have listened to us singing the Munsters theme song, but they do it a lot better on Uma Thurman. It's such a cool song. Like I said, it debuts number 73.
Can you name some other famous names that have hit the Hot 100? In terms of like song titles that have proper names in them, like Uma Thurman?
Well, the first one, embarrassingly, the first one that comes to mind is Walks Like Rihanna, that Wanted song from a couple years ago. Do you remember that song?
Yeah, I do. I only because I was researching this earlier.
What else we got?
Well, Walks Like Rihanna actually didn't chart on the Hot 100, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aww.
Sorry. Just a couple. Duck Sauce's Barbra Streisand.
Yeah, of course. Great song.
Then you have Taylor Swift's Tim McGraw, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
You have Kim Carnes's Betty Davis Eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are just a couple, but it's a fun thing. We may or may not do something about this later this week on billboard.com, but there's a fun list of, you know, proper names and hits on the Hot 100. There you go.
Very cool. Yeah. No, it's such a... I would love to read that. That's a fun little chart statty. That's what you guys do best.
That's what we live for.
So speaking of the Hot 100, where Uma Thurman debuts, Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars is still number one. This is week number 3, I believe, for that song. And
4.
Week number 4?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3, 4?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll check because I've got the power of a computer in front of me.
While you check, I'm going to say that Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud.
Third week.
New single.
Third week at number 1. But,
yeah, see? Oh, man.
Man, I suck.
Okay. Come on. Don't be so hard on yourself. Ed Sheeran Thinking Out Loud is up to number 2 this week. It was number 4. Now this is, it continues to be Ed Sheeran's highest charting hit on the Hot 100. And Keith, my question to you is, looking at all the stats, I don't know if you have had a chance to glance at them, do you think Thinking Out Loud could be Ed Sheeran's first number 1 single on the Hot 100?
Well, you know, let me bring up the numbers in front of me.
So you're thinking out loud right now.
I'm thinking out loud. I'm kind of stalling out loud. So Ed Sheeran's number 2. Yeah, he goes 4-2. He's really far behind number 1.
So Uptown Funk is really
like there's this huge like sort of like, I mean, it's not like Grand Canyon sized space between them, but it's like pretty hefty. And Uptown Funk continues to gain at a much higher rate. So Ed Sheeran could be one of those like, oh, it was great to be number 2 for like a month type songs. So
yeah,
we'll see. But it looks like Mark Ronson's settling in for a nice long run at number 1.
Well, there you go. I mean, we kind of saw this coming. It'll be interesting to see if Thinking Out Loud continues to grow and, you know, up to number two. It is crazy that this song is Ed Sheeran's biggest hit to date. You think of how long the A-Team was on the Hot 100, and then you think of, like, songs like Don't and Sing, but they just never got into, you know, the upper reaches of the Hot 100, just like Thinking Out Loud. Speaking of which, Maroon 5 Sugar, which you mentioned earlier in the show, it debuts at number 8.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive. I mean, Maroon 5, no stranger to the top 10 of the Hot 100. Both of their previous singles, Animals and Maps, were in there. But this is a big debut, and it's mostly, I assume, due to that viral friendly music video release that came out. It was actually last Wednesday, I believe, the video was released.
Yeah, it was up, you know, in sales and airplay, of course, but it had a huge gain in streams. But keep in mind, as I'm looking at the math in front of me, I'm looking at, like, sort of a spreadsheet here. Actually, most of its points this week on the Hot 100 came from sales. So it isn't just, you know, a crazy viral phenomenon on its own. However, without the video, this would not be in the top 10. It would be farther down the chart. Its airplay, though, is just kind of getting started. It's doing well, but it's not. I'm trying to see where it is. It's not in the top 10 yet, because Animals is still the big hit single on the radio. So we could see this dip a little bit in the next week or two as the airplay catches up. So I wouldn't be surprised if this falls out of the top 10 next week.
Well, we kind of saw that, and skipping ahead to the next song I want to talk about is Sia's Elastic Heart, which kind of the same effect. It dips this week outside of the top 20, debuted in the top 20 last week, essentially because of, and we didn't talk about it on last week's show, but debuts in the top 20 basically because of the new video with Maddie Ziegler and Shia LaBeouf. Everybody was watching that video when it came out, and it's still doing very well. But like you said, same thing with Maroon 5's new song Sugar. The radio airplay is just not there yet. But I mean, listening to Elastic Heart, I think this has Smash written all over it. I mean, the song is now a year and a half old because it was on the Hunger Games Catching Fire soundtrack, not even the latest Hunger Games soundtrack. It's now released in a solo version on Sia's album, Thousand Forms of Fear. What do you think of this song, Keith?
I actually think it could be a real hit. You know, the SNL performance that she did was super compelling, and we actually got to see more of Sia than we normally see of Sia. We got to see a little more of Sia.
Oh, man. Do you think that she's, like, slowly working her way up to just revealing her face? Like, I mean, the Grammys are coming up.
I bet you she'll be on the Grammy Awards, and I bet there's going to be some sort of unique performance that will probably, you know, showcase her. I would imagine that there's probably them trying to figure out a way where they can, you know, creatively, you know, make her, you know, still the focus of the performance, but at the same time, you know, keep it within something that she's comfortable in doing. But yeah, I mean, it'd be weird to think if she wasn't on the Grammy Awards performing. But you asked me what I think of the song. I think the song could be a hit. I think it's interesting and quirky and different enough and still kind of groovy at the same time. So I think it could be a hit.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny going back to the performances, how on one hand it's like, all right, come on, Sia. Like, as much as we, you know, we respect her wishes and her desire not to show her face, it's like, you know, there are press photos of Sia out there. You can do a quick Google image search and see what Sia looks like if you really want to, very easily. But on the same, on the other hand, like, by hiding her face, we've gotten so many unique performances, like the two that we had on SNL this past weekend, as well as the ones with Lena Dunham and the other ones with Maddie Ziegler on Ellen. I mean, it's not the worst thing, I guess, that she's turning her back to her audience literally and letting other people interpret her songs for her. Just kind of switches up the performance mold on late night television. I don't see anything wrong with that. So cool. Anyway, going back to the Hot 100, the last song I want to talk about, Keith, is Kelly Clarkson's new single, Heartbeat Song. It came out last week and debuts at number 37 on this week's Hot 100 chart. And, you know, a top 40 debut for Kelly Clarkson. But, you know, is this like a little bit lower than expected, Keith? I mean, this is Kelly Clarkson's big comeback single. It's been a couple years since her last project. And, you know, it could eventually get there. And it doesn't obviously have the radio play yet. But what do you think of this debut?
I think we can't judge this necessarily just by the first week. Because,
true,
as I mentioned last week on the podcast, her last studio album, which was back in 2011, its first single was Mr. Know-It-All, which, you know, did okay. It debuted at 18. It debuted at 18 on the Hot 100 and then eventually climbed number 10. But then the second single was Stronger, What Doesn't Kill You, and that became a number one hit. So I think this is just one of those things where they're kind of reintroducing Kelly. You know, she's had a baby, you know, she put out a greatest hits album, she put out a Christmas album, she's had some time to sort of regroup, and it doesn't have to be all about like, boom, first week, yeah. It's like, you know, no, Kelly Clarkson is a career artist that has a, you know, very, like a more than a decade's worth of hit material behind her. It's not just about the first week, so we will see where this goes in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, on the offset, you kind of hope that it's going to have a bigger debut, but at the same time, the video is not out yet. Maybe it'll have a splashy push because of that in the coming weeks. And as radio latches onto this song, it'll be interesting to see how high it can climb. And yeah, like you said, the second single from her last album, Stronger, was the one that really exploded. What Doesn't Kill You, and so maybe Heartbeat Song really isn't the huge look here. Maybe there's another song coming. I've said this a couple times, but I'm really glad that she's worked with Greg Kurstin again on this new album, which is coming in March. Can't wait for that one. So Keith, let's quickly get to Dawn Richard again. Dawn was a member of both Danny DeCane and Diddy Dirty Money, and has moved on from both of those projects to release some really stunning solo albums. 2013, she released a great album called Golden Heart, which was full of just really slick, icy R&B music. And now this new one that came out last week, Black Heart, it's on Spotify. Check it out. It's just one of the weirdest, most compelling R&B releases you're going to hear this year. So Keith, she stopped by, like I said, to talk about the end of Danny DeCane and going independent and Blackheart and the next steps in her solo career. Also, I want to point out that I was joined on this interview by Billboard's Stephen Horowitz, who is a huge Dawn Richard fan as well, and wanted to tag team this interview. So if you hear a voice that is not mine and is not Dawn's, it's Stephen. He was in the Pop Shop Podcast house. So here we go, Dawn Richard on the Pop Shop Podcast. We were just talking about it a little bit, but you've had such an insane year.
Yeah.
What does this moment, this culmination, feel like for you?
Euphoria. Like I'm kind of like in this state of surrealness, because it kind of was a bit dark and crazy in the beginning, and kind of like literally seeing the fruits of our labor now. And what's even more like just in awe, I'm in awe of, is that it's only two of us doing this. So it's really exciting to see people embrace a project that literally is being curated by two people.
Yeah. And when you say two people, you mean you and your assistant, Kyle.
Me, yeah, me and, awesome. And Iron Man, Kyle.
Iron Man, Kyle.
He is not really a human. He is actually a superhero.
He is a superhero. Yeah. I mean, you're doing this without, like you said, a manager.
No manager.
No label.
No label. No PR.
How?
No.
I mean, you've had it from the other side of the major label life. How much is this better? Do you prefer this, or is it that much harder? Like, what? How would you compare the two experiences?
It's not about harder or better. It's just two different worlds completely. Yeah. I will say it is fairly impossible to act as a label. You have to have a large amount of money behind you to really move the way I would really want to move. My mind and my ideas really operate too big for the reality of my pockets.
Yeah.
But what we've managed to do is act as a small business. And so we've put our money in the right places, made smart moves strategically, really kind of been smart about the way we market ourselves. And what we've managed to do is not try to compete as a label, but more so be authentic in our delivery. And I think when you're real, people gravitate towards you. So when we don't have the biggest of things, what we try to do is be relatable. and reach people in a real way. And that's the best we can do, is move small, but move with intent, you know, and purpose.
Yeah, I mean, this no part of this album is small to me. This is a grand statement.
Right.
And I want to talk a little bit about transitioning from the pop of Danny DeCane.
Mm-hmm.
You guys just put out a new album a few months ago.
Yeah.
And now you're going into Blackheart. Like, how do you expect people to find the transition a little bit jarring? Like, how do you kind of prepare people for this experience?
That's an awesome question, because that's exactly what it is. I mean, people almost find it hard to believe.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's been hard to get labels, because people just don't, like, indie labels are like, we don't believe it. I mean, is she really indie? She was just pop 5 seconds ago. She was in a pop group. And then mainstream is like, I mean, well, are you mainstream? Because now you're doing this totally different type of music. So it does take people a bit off guard. But what I always say to this is, I was always me coming into this. When I chose to do Making the Band, I came from New Orleans where there were no options. Yeah. There were no choices. And so to do a show that you could actually, you know, you have an option to really sing, that was an alternative. That was it. We didn't have American Idol and all that back then. No one was coming to New Orleans.
Yeah.
So that was my choice to get into that, because I really wanted to sing. I had no idea that choosing that would mean people would only see me in one light, because I always saw music as everything. Like telling you, I loved Bjork, and I was from New Orleans, a black kid from the Night Ward who first concert was Green Day. Yeah. That was who I was. So I came into Making the Band and Danny DeCane thinking I could be whatever I wanted to be. I had no clue people would say, okay, you're pop, now you have to stay there.
Yeah.
And what's ironic to me is, people find what I'm doing so jarring, but then you look at someone like a Taylor Swift who started in country, who had like a sundress on to her knees, and then now is become a pop star.
Yeah.
Like literally transitioned ever so quickly and cleanly, and it's not a surprise or jarring to anyone. I mean, her label model looked at her and said, you're ridiculous, but the world believed in her. They took that chance. Billie Jean trip and feeling like a fake. I never stay too long on my own crate. And if you're lucky, 2023, send that pretty number to my new legal team. No counting sheep up in the city.
I'm curious, because from Armoron to Golden Heart and now to Black Heart, I mean, the first two projects were kind of, the songs were a little bit more, I guess, manicured, you could say. They had a lot more structure to them. Mm-hmm. And then I'm listening to Blackheart, and the songs really go in so many different directions. I mean, what kind of headspace did you have to get into kind of think that broad, I guess?
Life happened. Like, that was what life was making me feel. And that was just the honest output of that. Like, you know, I was structured in Golden Heart. When you're naive and you've got your plan, you're coming from into life and you're just now going through life, you got a whole little fucking manila folder. Or you're like, you know, you're like, I'm going to be this. I'm going to be a surgeon. I'm going to be awesome. That's what I'm going to be. When you come to your first job, you're like, I'm finna have the best outfit ever. And then after year three, you come in with your sweats and your boss hates you. And you know, that Blackheart, our life was different than what I thought it was going to be. And so it was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But structurally so, like beautifully so. Sometimes your biggest and your best moments are your messiest. And to me, it's, you know, Blackheart isn't messy, but it is jarring. Like you said, it is uncomfortable. It's all those feelings you feel when you fall on your face. And I fell pretty damn hard.
Yeah.
So that's honest. And the fact that you said that makes me happy, because you understand what it is. That is exactly what those feelings were.
Mm-hmm.
And Golden Heart was exactly what you felt with the structure of that. That's where I was in that time. Music should imitate your life. Art imitates life.
Yeah. I mean, going back to what you said just about that kind of mess that you've come out of. I mean, I saw Danny DeCane when you guys performed in New York.
Yeah.
It was a fun show. This ride that you had with the reunited group was brief, but did you enjoy the making of this album and the shows? And I know that it ended kind of strangely,
yeah,
but did you enjoy that
Absolutely.
Process?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, because it's music.
Yeah.
And when you get to share your dream with other people, that was the point of doing it. It was bigger than us. Sometimes we get lost in that, and it starts to be about us and not about the people and the music. Yeah, I loved it, because every time I'm on stage with someone, or even just it's music, I'm in love. I'm happy. Happiest moments there. It's dealing with people that is the sucky part. If I could just deal with notes and music, life would be grand. But people are the ones that make it all messy and icky, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I assume that's why carving out a space as a solo artist has been? I mean, after, you know, Dandy Kane as well as Diddy Dirty Money, like, this is, you seem the happiest doing this.
Well, because no one's questioning it. It's just organic. It's not about taking money and making money and numbers and, you know, we got to do this and we have to make this look good and we have to have a TV show. We have to not have a TV show. It's so stripped down to just art, music. What are we saying? What is the message? Who are we trying to move? Healing people. That's all it needs to be about. If it starts there, the rest will follow. That's why it's been so easy with this process, because it's literally just, you know, the board, the mic, and the creation. My feet need to land on, but you have been free.
We were talking before and you said that your album's almost done. So what can we expect from that record?
I think this, where I am now in Blackheart, is where the sound is. I'm not caring. And I think with this album that I've just placed, it causes people to dream a bit bigger with me. So the Red Era will just be a lot more of this, but in a way more comfortable zone. You know, I'm playing with a little folk. Which I really, really love, you know. And then also a lot of hard trap beats. But the great part is, and I think people, this is what they get excited about, I'll do that on the same album and it'll never feel like it didn't belong there. Like even with Blackheart, there are a lot, Warriors is a little more urban pop, but then the end of Blackheart with that trip electro, they all fit seamlessly. Yeah. You never really feel like anything's forced. That's how the Red Era will be. You know, nothing forced, but playing with so many sounds that it fits for everybody. There is something on this album for any kind of head, any kind of junkie.
When do you have any kind of estimation?
When it's done, I'll just throw it.
All right.
Yeah, and I'll just be like, hey guys, want to write some stuff about it?
So again, thanks to Don Richard for stopping by the Pop Shop Podcast. Check out Blackheart. It is out now. It is great. And it's just a really interesting listen. It's always fun when we can have on this podcast, you know, interesting artists. We get so many different artists chiming in on this show weekly, and I was really happy to have Don as one of them. So Keith, that's going to do it for us, basically, except for...
I was like, wait a second.
Your char stat of the week.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I was like, how could you forget?
I would never forget.
So this week, in 1998, on January 24th, 1998, the soundtrack to Titanic sailed to number one on the Billboard 200 chart. And spent 16 straight weeks atop the list.
Straight weeks? It's crazy.
Are you okay? Have you had something over there?
No, man. I mean, 16 straight weeks. I mean, even like 1989 has been going for weeks and weeks at number one, but dips in and out of number one. Like 16 straight, 4 months at number one. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Well, no album would actually spend more time at number one until Adele's 21 racked up 24 non-consecutive weeks atop the list back in 2011 and 2012. Titanic even spawned the rare, super successful sequel soundtrack, which is, you know, kind of unusual. It was called Back to Titanic, which peaked at number two on the Billboard 200, stuck behind Lauryn Hill's The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Of course, the Titanic soundtrack contained the mega hit My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion, which hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. It was inescapable for most of 1998 and was so ubiquitous that it won Record of the Year the following year at the Grammy Awards. And it also won the Best Original Song Academy Award at the Oscars. Everything was coming up Titanic for Celine Dion. So there you go. This week in 1998, Titanic hit number one on the Billboard 200 chart.
Thank you, Keith, for your unsinkable chart stat of the week. All right, man, that is going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast this week. It's crazy because I feel like the last couple of shows we've had have stretched on past like the 45-minute mark to the hour mark, and this one is like nice and tidy. Got through all that chart stat news, got to Dawn interview, and we out of here.
You know what we're doing is we're trying to conserve ourselves because we have a lot of big shows coming up, including a lot of stuff happening during Grammy week. So
oh my goodness, I know.
Just you wait, you guys.
I know. We got some really, really cool stuff coming up. We have an awesome guest next week. We have some cool stuff, as Keith said, in the works of Grammys. Can't wait to unveil all of that. Keith, do you have any parting words?
I do not.
All right. We are going to go out. Like I said, man, it's Bjork week. We got to go out on a Bjork song. Let's go out on...
So Quiet?
Yeah, you know what? Let's go out on It's So Quiet. Thanks for listening, everybody, and take care.